we're back at it. Homegrown Radio, broadcasting live, of course, on homegrownradio.net. Chuck Dizzle, DJ Head.
Hey, that's
in the building with us right now, man. And what's so dope about this cat right now, we were talking outside or right before we got on, is that the shit he was doing is low-key the same shit Homegrown was doing. So it's like, I'm really interested to talk to this dude, man. You guys know him from the Drink Champs podcast, in the building with us right now.
His resume supersedes that,
though. Absolutely, absolutely. DJ EFN in the building right now.
Yeah, make
absolutely.
Some noise.
Drink Champs, make some noise. Bring the drink,
champs. Boom, 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 boom.
Absolutely, man. How you feeling, bro?
I'm a little drunk still.
That's good.
Last night.
That's
you. What'd you do last night?
Just sake bombs, bombs with friends.
Sake bombs with friends.
Hung out with. Shout out to homie Murs. He just dropped the album today.
Shout out to my big
homie. We were hanging out with him last night. So yeah.
Hey, Murs is crazy as fuck.
Yeah.
Let me tell you why Murs is crazy. Because he really rapped 24 hours.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, he did.
You know what I'm saying? And I was like,
look it.
And he looked it. He looked it before he was rapping for 24 hours.
Like, I think his beard grew even more. Like,
fucking crazy, yeah, bro. Man, I shot the homie, though.
Love to the dude. But now, EFM, man, I didn't know you were actually from L.A., bro.
Born in L.A. I mean, the hospital was in Anaheim, but I lived in Southgate, Huntington Park.
Wow.
My family now is in Downey. I was telling him, my grandparents lived in Inglewood.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I don't know the area. They actually had tried to move them because they built the freeway where they used to live. It was like, I think Inglewood and Hawthorne. I don't know, something.
Oh,
I don't know if that makes sense.
105. 105 freeway. Yeah. So it's off of
And I used
Hawthorne. Yeah.
And that's where I have my fondest memories.
Wow.
And I heard a bunch of drive-bys.
You might hear one or two while we out here right
my
now.
My grandparents were there during the riots.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And they called me and they were telling me how, like, the news was only showing, this is crazy. They're like, it's a bunch of Latinos out here rioting. The news is not exciting.
Right.
Not showing that. Don't put nothing past the Latinos, gonna make it work.
Yeah. Make it happen.
They're like, the Mexicans, you know, my grandparents, they're Cuban, so they're like, they're not. In their mind, they're like, they're not Mexicans. So they're like, the Mexicans are wilding the fuck out.
And you ever noticed that? Like, I was talking to my boy, Andrew, and then Akash. I don't know if you know who Akash Singh is, but they're comedians. And he was saying how people in sub-minority groups are more racist than white people. He's like, Indian people hate Hindu people.
Yeah.
And fucking, you know what I mean? Like, Cubans hate Mexicans.
Yeah, everybody thinks they're different or whatever. They whatever little thing that's different from them, they're like, I'm not them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
at least I'm not that.
Like, yeah, like South Americans to Cubans, because they killed all the Indians in Cuba. Like, quick.
Damn.
Like, Taino Indians were wiped out. So a lot of the Cubans are either descended from Africans or Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
So the Cubans feel they're better because they're not Indian. I don't know why that's bad.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they're like, South Americans are fucking Indians. You know, like, I don't know why that's a bad thing, but okay, whatever, you know?
Right. Now, man, he said that your resume supersedes the Drink Champs podcast, and that's one of the things I want to touch on. I definitely want to touch on your documentary as well. But, you know, going from day one, man, who is DJ EFN? Where did it all start for you? And coming from L.A. and then going to Miami, obviously, and starting from there, building, where did this love for hip-hop come from? And then we'll get into the whole story.
I mean, I had love for music, period.
Okay.
Like, I love music. Music, you know, it's just something that was a calling early in life. And then I tell the story, like, I was into all kinds of music. So if you heard of, when I was a little kid, I was a skater, you know, which might have been my LA influence. Right, I don't know, but I was a skater, you know. Yeah. And then I had mixtapes, my own little mixtapes I would make. And I would have anything from, like, punk rock, thrash, because skaters like to listen to thrash and punk. And I had, like, Beastie Boys and LL and Dougie Fresh. And
yeah.
It was this Megadeth, Iron Maiden. Like, it was a mix of all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't have, like, the calling specific to hip-hop yet. But I always say that when NWA came on the scene, I never heard, like, a music, I mean, in terms of rap and hip-hop, that really, like, it called it, like, an emotion came out. Like, I was scared of these motherfuckers. I'm like, yo, this shit is, like, they mad.
It's dangerous.
They angry, you know? And hip-hop, to that point, for me personally, hadn't conveyed that emotion.
It was happy.
You know, not even just happy, just hadn't given that emotion. It was just, like, kind of like, you know, I don't know. It just didn't give that kind of, like, emotion that just jumped out at me.
Gotcha.
And I was like, this shit is powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did any music at that point ever do that for you? Or was it just at that time hip-hop?
Well, no. Other music did it, but it wasn't. What happened was that I realized that this is the music of my generation. Like, I loved music from other generations.
But you can relate to this now.
So, you know, I felt like the music is, like, the soundtrack of generations and lives, you know. So, and I love, like, music and movies, and you can, like, the music helped me, like, interpret the movie.
Gotcha.
So
it's like a score.
Yeah, the score of like your life.
Right, right, right.
So when NWA came and I saw the power of hip hop, then I was like, yo, this music is in its infancy. And I could actually get involved in it if I really wanted to. And even more in Miami. Because in Miami it was even more infant.
Right.
You know, the scene wasn't bubbling like that.
Nah, it wasn't. Bass music and shout out to Luke and all these guys, but they at that point Miami bass felt it they were like different from like hip hop. Gotcha. Like they were like sub genres, you know, like they were trying to separating itself.
Was it more or less like a commercial type of thing, or just a different type of music?
Okay. You know, gotcha. like I mean, now in retrospect, it's all hip hop.
Gotcha.
But back then, it was like it's dance music. Gotcha.
Kind of like techno or some shit.
Right,
like that.
And hip hop is
or like how they do like dubstep. Like dubstep is essentially like a trap ish. Right. So it's like I see the comparable.
Yeah. So I felt like I was like, yo, I think I could get involved in this, and I could actually. Like I have a chance in being involved in this evolution in my city at least, and that's when it started. Like I didn't know what I was gonna do. I wasn't a DJ yet. I didn't have bread to be a DJ. Right. Like I didn't have money to buy turntables. Yeah. I was broke as a motherfucker.
And we got the same fucking story,
you know. And when I finally was able to, like, first I used to make pause tapes off of two tape decks, which are hand-me-down tape decks.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. And then when I finally had a little paper, I got the starter, the DJ starter kit in the back of the Source magazine, the two Geminis.
Crazy, yeah.
And then later, a couple years after that, my father helped me get techniques, and then when I got the techniques is when I got a little bit more serious. But I started like my crew, Crazy Hood Productions, before I was a DJ, and we would throw parties and stuff.
And this was when you were in Miami. This is when you actually
everything's moved. I was raised in Miami.
Gotcha,
you know,
gotcha.
But I feel LA because I have family here. I come here almost damn near every year.
Yeah,
and I feel like I'm bi-coastal in that sense. Yeah. But I'm a Miami boy.
When you decided to like when you pulled out your like because I remember my first time when I hopped on the turntables like and I was trying to learn how to DJ and figured out like what did that shit sound like.
Like shit.
Because I remember that shit like and then when another question is this is DJ shit.
Yeah.
But when you was like filling around on the turntables and trying to figure out like did you just start mimicking shit you used to see other people do it or did
Yeah,
you...
I had no I didn't know any DJs. I'm just looking at videos or reading magazines and I started buying the X-Men videotapes. The X-Men DJ crew, you know? And I was just like, they turned the turntable like this?
Oh, that's how it goes. Okay.
I'll do that, you know what I'm saying? And I was just, you know, try and do whatever I saw. But, I wish I knew some DJs back then because I would have been a hell of a lot better.
Right.
But I had such a passion for it, man. Like, you know, just having turntables. And those first Geminis were belt drive, which are horrible.
Belt drives are terrible.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Terrible. But that? I was the happiest
Direct driver, belt drive. It's a kind of turntable. It's like... the direct driver is like more like it's like magnet.
Just put it like this: when you go like this, the shit. Yeah, it takes a minute to go back.
Okay. Yeah,
God damn. So it's not as on point.
No, not at all.
Now, Crazy Hood Productions. Now you started that. Mm-hmm. What was the reasoning behind starting Crazy Hood Productions at the time?
Well, like I said, I just wanted to get involved in the local scene.
So this is your participation in the scene for the
right.
Most part.
It was my senior year of high school. You know, you everybody's thinking you're senior. What am I gonna do in life?
Right.
So I was like, I want to be in hip hop. I want to start. You know, everybody was Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
So you think of a name, and the reason why it was Crazy Hood is crazy because I literally thought I was insane.
Really?
like medically.
Really?
Yeah, I thought I was like
clinically insane.
Yeah, like not thugged out insane. I thought I was like
why?
Just life. Like
You had been through some shit, and you was
like I tell people like. I understood the Columbine motherfuckers. Like,
wow.
I thought of that shit, my
crazy.
Damn self.
Get the fuck
but I wasn't gonna
here.
Kill innocent people. I was gonna kill some motherfuckers that I hated. You know,
right.
So like, yeah, I thought I was like a little bit loose.
Yeah,
you know, like with my shit. So that's where crazy came from. And then hood because the attire for hip hop heads in that time was wearing hoodies.
Gotcha.
Even in Miami's hot, but in school was cold.
Right.
They crank up the AC, so we rocked the hoodies.
Yeah.
The champion hoodies, to be specific. So it was crazy hood, not neighborhood.
Gotcha,
people thought always it was neighborhood.
Yeah.
And productions to sound professional.
Gotcha.
So
we're
Crazy Hood Productions, you know?
That's the way trying to throw that shit on it to make it sound less abrasive.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like
Crazy Hood Incorporated.
Yeah. And our slogan is Who's Crazy, which is rhetorical, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so you start off to do that, and in that sense, did you ever want to rap at the time too, or was it more or less you knew I'm a player?
Everybody tried to rap.
Yeah. Oh, somebody was asking me. I didn't want to be a rapper, but I'm like, I could rap.
I can do that. Yeah, I got some bars.
Everybody
for
tried to rap.
So I rapped on the intros of like a lot of my, well, not a lot, but a couple of my mixtapes I rhymed, you know.
Crazy. And then you
and wrote out my own lyrics, by the way.
There we go. No, that's the big thing.
No,
man.
You didn't.
So, I completely wrote my lyrics.
Don't all lie, my own shit. Don't lie.
That was the era.
Nobody
you
writes
could
their
not,
own shit.
You had to write your lyrics.
It's crazy nowadays that's what we're dealing with. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Ghostwriting and
it's always been a thing.
Yeah, it's nothing new. It's nothing.
That's nothing new.
Yeah,
it's just at the forefront of. Do you think that takes away from an artist? Like, do you like? I remember I listened to. I'm subscribed to the podcast, so I was listening when you guys were talking about.
The argument.
I was listening to Retargument actually today. Because I'm behind a couple of weeks, but it was one back in. I remember it was you had somebody on, and we were talking, and you guys were talking.
Eddie the Ass Eater was drunk as fuck, and he was going in.
You guys
were
talking about ghostwriters, and it's like in order to be the best,
right?
Do you have to write your own shit? And I remember you being somewhat objective about it, like it wasn't.
I held back that episode. I wasn't.
That's what I'm saying. You were being objective. It wasn't concrete. So that's why I'm asking you now. What do you think as far as to be the GOAT, like to be number one? Greatest do you have time. To write your own shit?
It depends on what you're saying. Number one in entertainment or number one in hip hop?
In hip hop,
I think you got to write your own shit.
So okay, but that's fair. That's fair.
But I'm not mad at you if you don't, and you're just a good entertainer.
Right.
Right. Right. You know? No, I was. You know what? That's dope too. That you because on the one I was listening to today about the Young Thug thing. As far as like, oh, people say I'm an entertainer. Or I'm. They don't. They kind of like try to take away from their responsibility or discredit themselves before you can do it.
Yep.
Do you think that's a cop out or do you think that
total cop out?
Total cop out. Yeah, that's what I think too.
Because nobody really. Well, I'm not gonna say nobody, but at this point, right now, all the lines of it are pretty much blurred. Like nobody's saying, like you said, it's either hip hop or entertainment. Nobody's stepping in and saying, look, I am the king or queen of hip hop. It's like, yo, it's rap. And when you say rap, it's like, it's based off the numbers. Oh, is it based off the numbers or is it based off of lyrics? Like, nobody goes in a specific direction and say, yo, this is what it is and that's where it goes. Having arguments with people on Facebook, and that's one thing that you notice.
Facebook people are the worst.
They'll have their own opinions.
On the internet, period.
Yeah, people have their own fucking opinions, but then when you break it down to what the science of what they're thinking about, it's like, oh, well, you're saying entertainment or you're saying bars. Like, shit wasn't like it was back in the days. If we're talking about hip-hop, like, in its purest form, and people talk about in the raw aspect of hip-hop, these motherfuckers aren't doing the same shit that they were doing back in the day. You're not going into parks battling, freestyling like they were back in the day.
Right.
It's entertainment now. It's all attention at this point in time. Now, granted, you got to have bars, but even bars is broken down to, yo, who's getting the most attention at this point in time? So,
do you think, okay, so let me ask you this, from your perspective, because you've seen multiple generations eras in the evolution of hip-hop, right?
Absolutely.
Are you still in love with it like you were when you got those techniques?
I fall in and out of love all the time with hip-hop.
I agree
like
with
sometimes
that,
I'm in a space where something like an event and I'm like, this is what I remember.
Yeah. Right.
And then sometimes and also the business is what taints it.
Yeah.
Like I hate the business of music and hip-hop and, you know, so I fall in and out of love all the time.
That's real shit. Cause I feel like that all the time. Like me and him will talk about it and it's like, it'd be like, you know how people will ask you, like, oh, you know, are you passionate? Do you still have the hunger? It's like, I still have the hunger, and I still have the drive to want to be a part of
the hunger.
The culture.
Man, that's really hungry.
The hunger.
That's really hungry. Okay.
I'm hungry right now. So I still have the hunger to be a part of the culture and to do and embrace what it is. But then, like you said, once you get involved in the business of it and you start seeing behind the curtain, it kind of takes the allure away from it. Have you had that experience?
Yeah, no, I do. Time. What I'm passionate about is, like, I look at it now like I believe I'm an artist, like art, and I want to create my vision, so I'm passionate about that.
Yeah.
So I want to give people, like, I want to try and show people what made me passionate about hip-hop through my creations, and that's what I'm passionate about now.
Yeah.
But often I fall in and out of love out of the whole scene of, you know, the culture of what it is. Sometimes it's not even a culture anymore. It's just it's just a business.
It is.
And it sucks, you know? I feel bad. Like now I get it. Like, you know how you say, you know, when you're young and your parents, like, shit. Yeah. Like, I get it now. Yeah. Like, I get it, you know? And that's why I love that. I'm so happy that I got involved because it is the music of my generation and I got to see it in its baby steps and I got to experience it and meet artists before they were, you know, huge. And I'm grateful for that, man. Right. I feel bad for kids that don't have that now. Because they don't have that. Seeing it's not what it was.
I have an experience. I have something that I talk about all the time where I don't want to be a part of. Like, I stopped wanting to be a part of shit that I'm a fan of.
Right.
And like, it doesn't necessarily come from hip hop, but it comes from the entertainment industry, yeah. The business of entertainment, right?
Evil.
So like, so you talking about like shit that I'm into the entertainment industry. I'm a gamer, and like I used to love professional wrestling. Like okay. I was a big fucking. I flew to Miami actually for WrestleMania.
Did you vote for Trump? Because
negative.
He got all his skills from the wrestling world.
Exactly. So the thing is, and I love watching Trump get his ass whooped during that whole phase. But the reason I bring that up is because I've met certain artists and people who I was fans of, and or necessarily I met them, also been around them, right. Been in situations where we worked together, and it's like, oh, you fucked it up for me.
Yeah.
That, do you have a couple of those?
All the time.
So are you at the point now, like where I'm at, it's like, I don't want to meet nobody else I'm a fan of.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, all the time, man. It's disappointing. You get disappointed by the icons, the legends, or whatever. But I mean, like I've become jaded by it.
Exactly.
So like
that's
I said,
dope that you can own that though.
Like I fall back on just I want to be passionate about what I do and try to give people that same feeling that someone gave me back in the days. I want to give that to somebody else, and that's what I'm concentrating on.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask you about that too. Like you said, going through different phases of this industry, this career, and just going through ups and downs. I was gonna say what keeps you motivated, but the art of giving back obviously is key.
Creation, man. Yeah. Like it's just to be able to wake up and especially when you have something like a Drink Champs that's so successful. What I love about that is I wake up every morning and there's a different opportunity because of the success of that show.
Yeah.
But I can segue into something else that I'm doing, you know? Right. So it's always exciting for me. That's what I love.
Yeah.
If you wake up in the morning and you got no emails and nobody gives a fuck about you,
it's no motivation.
You're like, damn, I can't do shit, you know? What
the fuck is
going
on?
Yeah, but I look forward to the fact that I can do things and impact people, you know what I'm saying? I could use this platform and do other things.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about the success of the Drink Champs, man, because you guys did it. You guys had a radio show prior to that.
Yeah, XM before the merger and then Sirius XM.
Really? Okay, so talk about that, because we went from you obviously moving from LA to Miami, wanting to be involved with this infancy stage of hip hop.
Right.
Obviously being responsible for helping multiple artists get their names and breaking out there in the scene. So now that fast forward some years, you know, you have the recognition, you have people behind you, and now you do this show on Sirius and on XM.
Right.
What did and didn't work out with those situations to now, obviously it's working with Drink Champs, but it didn't work with those two situations.
I mean, I don't know why it didn't work back then, but it wasn't called Drink Champs.
Yeah, no. Militainment
Crazy Raw Radio. Yeah, Nori had moved down to Miami. He moved specifically to my neighborhood, Kendall, after he did the reggaeton stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was working out of my studio, and we would get drunk, we get crazy, and then this opportunity came through Leo G at 66 Raw on XM, and they said, yo, we could pre-record our shows and send them to them, and they will air them on XM. We did that, and it's if you listen or you see, we have some clips on YouTube. It sounds just like Drink Champs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we're saying make some noise, we're drinking Tiger Bone, we're acting wild. Then the merger happened. Then we were on from 66 Raw station. We went to Hip Hop Nation and then to Backspin. And then Nori, CNN got back together and they did a tour in Europe. And that's when we just stopped doing it.
Gotcha.
And we weren't making no money off of it. It was just purely just to promote. Yeah, promote ourselves. But I love that. Like, I love doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, damn, how can we do this again and maybe monetize it somehow?
Right.
And I had a friend, and then you say gaming. I have a good friend, Godfrey, who does Gamertag Radio. He's actually like a
that shit is big.
Yeah.
No, gaming is huge.
Yeah. No, gaming with the gaming and then videoing that shit now, that's like I don't know how old it is.
Twitch,
now,
all that shit.
All that shit is.
Well,
is
my
there.
Homie from Gamertag Radio, they're like one of the original podcasts, like in the podcast Hall of Fame. And
really?
Shit. Yeah, and he's from my home. Yeah, yeah. Homie's like ill. And so he's always been like, what's ill about podcasters, they're advocates for podcasts. They want everybody to do a podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of like weird. You know, I don't want everybody to do what I'm doing.
Right, right, right.
So he was always like, yo, you gotta do a podcast. Right, you gotta do a podcast. Right. So he was always telling me, yo, do a podcast. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I would tell Nori, yo, we could do a podcast. And at first, he didn't get
it. Resistant to it.
Yeah, because podcasting seemed like nerd shit.
Yep.
You know, hip-hop motherfuckers want to fuck with podcasts.
Right.
So it took 5 years.
Wow, of convincing and trying to get...
Well, it's just different things happened. Like, the dudes from LS Loudspeakers Network, which is Combat, they had reached out. and to Nori, and they said, oh, why don't you do what you did on Sirius XM, do it as a podcast.
Oh.
And so he put them in contact with me, and it seemed like we were going to do it, and then Nori just didn't follow through, so it didn't happen. So I was like,
fucking the money up.
Yeah, so I'm like, they even sent equipment and everything. I had to send it back and shit.
Fuck out of here.
So, and then,
stop fucking the money.
Yeah. And then finally, I don't know, he came to his senses at one point. He was like, all right, let's do this. So we got serious again about it, and we started talking to those guys again. But then my boy Godfrey from Gamertag, he had been at CBS. He was doing stuff at CBS. He's like, yo, you want me to pitch it to CBS? And I told Nori, yo, CBS. And just CBS just sounds
he's
great.
He's like, oh, yeah, yeah,
CB
yeah.
fucking S.
Right,
yeah, I'm
right,
a CBS
right.
motherfucker.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know?
You
so
that out
Nori's like, yeah, that sounds
yeah,
amazing.
Right.
you know?
Hell yeah, do that shit.
So
yeah.
so we pitched it. We you know, they gave us a basic podcast deal. And then what really sealed the deal for Nori is he did Tech Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw there was like another street dude doing this, it, yeah. this platform. And yeah. he's like, oh, I could see myself doing
right,
this.
Right.
And then Jay-Z called him off of that interview he did.
So he knew the reach.
So he was like, oh, people are listening to this shit.
Yeah.
And then we launched the show from that.
Shout out to my bro Taxstone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, that's crazy. So I didn't realize that I knew that there was the show years back, but I didn't realize that you guys were in the position to possibly do the podcast at another point in time years
oh, yeah.
back.
Years.
That's wild. So I mean that just goes to show you, man, just stay consistent with your shit and figure some shit out and it worked.
And mind you, the brand I had held it, like I didn't know it was going to be a podcast, but I just loved the moniker Drink Champs.
Oh, okay. Because
we used to say it in our studio,
yeah.
like, you ain't a drink champ, you drunk motherfucker.
Right.
Yeah. So I got the website. Like,
you already had
like
it ready.
5 years
you was
before.
Ready to go.
I got the Twitter, I got the Instagram, all that shit, yeah.
It's safe to say that you are the, how do you say this, the anchor that keeps the ship in place.
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's say that. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to Nori.
Make that shit go. So now with this, this attention that you've gotten over here with Drink Champs, and I love successful stories like this because it goes to show, and for the people or the people that do listen to our show too, there's a combination of artists that's trying to get their name out there,
right.
brands that's trying to get up and just trying to get started, and a lot of the times they get discouraged because shit may not go right for them in the beginning.
Right.
But it's like, dude, you gotta fucking put your work in. It doesn't happen overnight. You know what I'm saying? How do you again, I'm not gonna say stay motivated, but being through this shit and the falling out of love with it, like
being jaded,
like
I'm jaded.
The creation of it, like sometimes you still get blocked by the politics or the bullshit.
Yeah.
How do you maneuver around that when you still want to be in the space to create in an industry that doesn't really give a fuck about creators?
Right. I believe in consistency.
Mm.
And then there's a point where you invest so much in what you're doing that you just can't look back.
True.
I don't believe in losing my investment.
Very true.
You know what I'm saying? My investment in life.
Yeah.
You know, because
investing
in
yourself.
Yeah, but I gave up a lot of things. Like it doesn't mean everybody has to do this, but I purposely didn't have a family, like children, because I knew if I had children, I was going to have to just divert from doing this stuff and just have a family.
Me too.
So I didn't have a family,
yeah.
you know, which now I'm trying to have a family.
Right, right.
But yeah, you just consistency, man. And what I did specifically, because I didn't come from money, is I just was versatile in business within the same scope of like the world that I'm in, like music and hip hop and culture. So I just, can I do marketing?
Yeah.
I market Crazy Hood.
Yeah.
I can market for you too.
Right.
So I became one of the biggest street teams in Miami. I worked for Def Jam, Capitol Records, Universal. I mean, you name it, Priority, whoever.
Yeah.
I Coca-Cola at one point, Bacardi. So I became a marketer. I'd opened a hip hop clothing store when that was, that was a void in Miami.
Mm.
But once they started selling clothing, you know, that wasn't my passion. Mm. So I stopped doing that.
Right.
You know, I manage artists because I make sense. I could tell people what to do.
Right.
I have the ideas. So I started managing artists. So it's like you got to become versatile. You got to find money within the space to support what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just be like, I'm just going to be a DJ and that's all I'm going to fucking do.
Nah, hell.
You know, I started a record pool. I was like, I'm getting records from all these fucking labels. So I was like, send me more.
Yeah.
And I started a record pool, you know?
Damn.
So, and I started a website and I started selling merch, you know, from early on. And I studied other people doing things like Luke Records, Ruthless Records, Rap-A-Lot Records. I'm like, what are they doing? How do they do? And I took little things that made sense to me and created my own blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still doing that,
yeah.
you know, and I'm still learning. I always believe you never stop learning.
Now, how do you do that? And because they also say you want to learn multiple things, but in order to be successful, you got to focus your attention on one thing for a certain period of time. What are your thoughts on that?
No, it's true. Like sometimes it was detrimental to what I'm doing to have all these different things, but it was needed because I had to have a living.
Right. Mm-hmm. But nobody else gonna do it for you anyway.
Right. Either. I need to make a living and but what's the thing is that you gotta manage yourself properly.
Gotcha.
You know, the your time and everything. But all these different things, I was able to meet different people in different areas of the industry,
mm-hmm.
which you create a network, and your network is really your net worth in, sure. in the industry.
100%.
You know, you create relationships and real relationships, yeah. not like you're just using somebody.
Right.
You know, like even when they down, you still fucking with them.
Exactly.
Because they're going to get back up too. And, you know, you might be down and you're going to get up. Like, you want to create real relationships. Mm-hmm. And that's what sustained me.
Yeah.
You know, these relationships helped me. Like, for example, when we did the first Coming Home, I was, and this goes back to being versatile. Like, I wasn't a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. My homie, that's one of my artists. He had went to like community college film school. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, let's go. Let's fucking create a film. Yeah, let's just do it, you know. And it got, you know, people liked it. And then my homie that was at MTV, they used to hit me up for the Mixtape Mondays.
Yeah.
He came to a screening we did in New York. And he's like, yo, I'm at this new network that Diddy's starting called Revolt.
Let me
get your
shit.
DVD and let me take it over there. This is in 2012 when we did the film.
Right.
And he's like, we're about to launch next year. And I was like, okay, cool, here. And then they hit me up and they licensed the film.
Network, full circle.
Man. And that's your network. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Your network.
So talk about the documentary. What was, when you linked up with your boy, like you said, it was in community college trying to start this off. Like, what were you attempting to do, and kind of give people the background of what the documentary is about, and just the whole different side of, like you said, creating for yourself.
The first film was strictly about, like, the first initial idea was I just wanted to go to Cuba as a Cuban American that never been, you know, I was born in the States, and I wanted to see Cuba in its bubble because I could already foresee that things were going to change. They were going to open up Cuba. I wanted to go before it opened up.
Oh, to see what it's authentically like.
Yeah, see it in the bubble.
Right.
Maybe see some remnants of what my parents might have lived in.
Right.
So that was the idea, just to go. And then once we started to plan the trip, I was like, I told my boy, I was like, let's film it. Like, this is an experience. Let's film it at the very least for ourselves.
Right. So this was just something you wanted to do for your own.
For myself, personal. I didn't think anybody would
care. No, but people don't get that experience. I've never, you know, saw that.
Right.
So, like, that's something I would want to see as an outsider.
So, no, it's all good. So when we started to plan it, then another friend of mine who had been to Cuba, because I was consulting with people who had gone, he's like, yo, I know amazing hip-hop artists in Cuba. Do you want to link with them? And I'm like, yeah, shit,
why not?
Dope,
yeah.
You know? So then I told my boys, like, let's just film everything, but let's make it a point to meet these artists. Let's see how they do hip hop in Cuba. So we filmed we went, filmed the experience, we came back, we put together this amateur film, and then some film festivals gave us, like, we got won like a couple awards, some small film festival. People started saying how much they loved the film. They loved the heart of the film. I mean, the film technically isn't that good. It's our first film.
Right.
But they really loved the authenticity of the film.
It's raw.
Yeah. And then, like I said, my boy took it to Revolt, and we were the first original acquisition at Revolt.
Really?
So I knew dudes that were filmmakers for years. That was their thing, and they couldn't get a film, you know, on TV.
Yeah,
that was hot. And I'm out the gate. So I was inspired.
I'm like, a little salty about that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Feel some kind of way about it.
I mean, I'm just like, yo, so.
You might feel some type of way about
heart.
It.
You just gotta have heart, bro.
Fuck him.
So when we would show the film to different, you know, I originally thought only Cubans would like it. Yeah. Maybe other Latinos might like the film. I didn't think other people would really care for the film. And we started to hear people from all walks of life, all cultures, all different, you know, ethnicities and backgrounds being like, yo, you're inspiring me. I want to go back to my parents, you know, country. And man, that'd be amazing. And then I was like, yo, maybe we could do like the hip hop Anthony Bourdain and go on behalf of everybody to these different countries, you know, and explore the country, you know, through hip hop. And then we went to Peru. My homie Beats in the Hood, he's one of our producers, young producers.
Shout out to you.
Yeah, he's Peruvian. We went to Peru and I just wanted to go to Machu Picchu.
Get the fuck out of here.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so I'm like, let's go to Machu Picchu, and we went with him. And then we went to Haiti. My homie who was Haitian American.
Oh, you got stamps.
Never been to Haiti. I took him back to Haiti. We went to the slums of Haiti, which was probably stupid.
Right.
But, you know.
Yeah, but you really got that authenticity.
I'll meet you in the lobby.
Yeah. No, the Haitians in Haiti were like, you're an asshole for going there. You would have died. You would have fucked our country up. So, and then in this recent film, we went to Vietnam.
That's crazy. So I didn't realize it was a series to this. I mean, there's been multiple trips.
I mean, my goal is to really do an Anthony Bourdain hip-hop. That's my ultimate goal.
That's amazing. Yeah. So throughout these trips, I mean, what are you noticing? What are the common themes that you're noticing from one area? Starting from home, from Cuba. but to, like you said, Peru. It was another place.
Haiti. And Vietnam. Now we're going to Colombia in April 1st.
Get the fuck out of it. So what are the common things that you're noticing across these trips in different countries?
I mean, that hip-hop is so influential around
the
world.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, I call it the number one cultural export from the United States.
Wow. Cultural, I like that. Yeah. I'm going to steal that. I'm not going to give you credit for
it. Take it, man.
I'm not going to give you credit. I'm just keeping it solid with you. I'm not going to give you credit for that. Yeah. I'm probably going to say that on Real 92.3.
I feel like the films, I'm trying to teach us here in the U.S. something, because our responsibility to the world is crazy. Like, this is something that we're influencing everybody around the world.
Right, right.
You know, and what are we doing with that opportunity? We're squandering it, man. Yeah. And it's ill because you see the way that people interpret hip hop in different countries different ways. You know, and the thing is that in some places it's dangerous how they're interpreting it because they take it literally.
Word.
So if we talking about gangbanging, drugs.
So it's not metaphors to them. It's not like
they like you. That's what you guys. That's right, hip hop. Then that's what I'm doing. Hip hop.
Well, I mean, you can see it in Japan. Japan has a strong West Coast influence. They got khakis and fucking low riders, and still they got bandanas and shit.
Let me tell you something. When I went to your experience was when you saw like, oh shit, this is some shit out here.
Yeah.
When I went and did a tour out in Japan. And I was out there, and I was going to like all over the country, like Chiba, and you know.
Yeah.
So when I'm at these places, and I'm looking around, like hip hop did this, like our music transformed their entire world that they live in their bubble, right? So essentially, when you go to these places and you see what music can do to people, or what a culture can do to a country. Did it fuck you up? Because when I'm out there and I'm watching dudes lit, like he said, I'm watching Crips and Bloods, and they got pistols and rags, and they girls are in bandana bikini tops and shit. And I see dudes that can't speak English. No, I'm from, like, I have a translator, right? One of my boys, DJ Kaz, he's from Japan, and he's translating. He's like, he said he's from Rolling 20 Crip in Long Beach. He's never left Japan. He cannot speak English, but he got on the Steelers shit,
right.
And you cannot tell him he's not from Rolling 20 Crip in Long Beach. And I was like, oh shit, okay, that totally transformed the way I thought about this shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Okay, so when you're there and you're looking at it, do you look at it like a happy, like, oh, this is dope? Or do you look at it like, oh shit, we gotta take accountability?
Yeah, no, sometimes it depresses me. Like I've told this story a couple times, but one of the things that happened, like, for example, in Peru, I think it's a perfect example of this. So I know West Coast is a little different, but in Miami, Latins, blacks, we all say nigga.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, it's a
common thing. So we're, my homie who's Jamaican, who rolls with us, we're in Peru, and there's this Peruvian kid, he's like a graffiti writer, he's like, the whole time, nigga.
Yeah.
So my boy, he's like, yo, man,
I'm not with all
I'm
that.
I'm not, you know, it's bad enough y'all motherfuckers say it.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta come to another motherfucking country and hear this motherfucker say it with an accent?
And the whole country.
He was hot. Yeah. He was hot, you know?
Where's he from?
He's Jamaican. He lives in Miami. He's Jamaican, okay, Jamaican. But via London. So
right.
Oh, I'm man. Not gonna Jamaicans are about their respect.
Yeah, no, my boy was heated. Yeah. So the dude, and he knows because he's friends with the kid now. So the kid, you know, he's the whole time, hey, my nigga. So
you got about seven left.
You got about seven left,
yo. It's not phasing me, obviously. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But my boy's like, yo, I'm not having this no more, bro.
Hey, he's taking it on a chin each time.
So the kid, he notices that my boy's got an attitude with him now. And the kid goes to me, he's like, in Spanish, he's like, yo, what's up with Drain? Like, why is he so mad at me? I said, bro, you keep saying nigga around him.
Right.
He's like, he looked at me like befuddled.
Right.
He's like, but you taught us that.
Yeah. He did it.
This is shit y'all gave you. You guys taught us that. Right. What do you want me to say? Right. It's in all the music. Right.
Damn. Then, yeah.
So they don't know. You know what? That's an interesting
but
thing.
But why would they? That's just, like I said, that's just the music, and that's the language. That's the lifestyle. If they're hearing that on every single track, they're going to just regurgitate that.
Okay, so what that does is leapfrog us into, let's say, a stereotype, right?
Right.
So, like me, I'm the asshole at the radio station. When we're at iHeart, I'm the asshole. I'm following everybody around, talking shit, saying disrespectful, irritating things to people. That's just
on
me.
Purpose.
On purpose. That's just how I get out. I'm just
naturally.
I'm just,
that's him.
Huh?
Naturally, that's just him.
That's just me. Naturally, like I just, you know what I mean. It's just so. When it comes to stereotypes, right? So, like, I'm like, I walk around and I ask all the white people, like, it was in February. Like, I walk up with my Snapchat, hey, what you getting me from Black History Month? All the white people in the office. And then, you know,
you want reparations now.
Right now. Immediately. We're going to settle this shit.
But a lot of people we work with know my personality.
Right, right.
So they're, you know, oh, I'm getting you some chicken or some watermelon. Now. Or
Right. Off back.
You know what I mean? I'm with all of that bullshit.
Right.
I'm with all of it.
You give it and you take it.
Yeah. I can take it. Right. So when your boy, the Jamaican guy, this, I'm pretty sure that in his mind, he has stereotypes that he's placed on other people as well.
Of course.
And he doesn't necessarily take accountability for it.
No, yeah.
So like when you like, oh, Asian people can't drive, or you know, oh, she's a woman, of course she's driving like that, or old people can't drive and all this kind of but stereotypes do come from a place.
It's real.
It's some real
it's
shit.
Real, man.
And so like to it. Like Jamaica, like make do a Jamaican accent.
Hey man.
See, that's a stereotype.
Not a mercy.
Yep. Yeah.
That's a stereotype.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, and you said see that, and that's not even fucking correct.
Right.
Because we also if you say do Jamaican to everybody, like, oh yeah, man, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So like it's kind of like he can't really be mad about it.
No. He was just being a hard ass. Like he's just being a jerk about it.
Did he understand that after the fact? Like, okay, we are responsible for it. Or
I mean,
it's still in the
he's
back?
A certain personality, just like how you're a certain way. Like my boy is just he
fucking piece
anal
of shit
about shit.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm a piece of
like,
shit.
Like I tell you, one time we was in a car in Miami, drunk as fuck, and I guess I was doing the same shit that the kid was doing in Peru. And I, mind you, he's my friend from high school,
right.
And he just had like he went off on me.
I'm sick of this shit.
Yo, I'm sick of y'all saying nigga. Fuck y'all motherfuckers saying nigga. I'm doing this shit. I'm like, what the nigga? What's wrong with you?
My nigga, what's wrong?
Shit. Nigga, hey, communicate. Might tell me what's wrong with this nigga, please. Oh,
that would have been funny if you would have hit him with that. Yo, what's wrong with this nigga?
I did.
Put that in the documentary, man. All right, so this one, the latest one you said is Coming Home Vietnam.
Yeah.
Now, were any of these...
Why would you go... I'm sorry. Why would you go to Vietnam?
For me, it was personal. Again, like Cuba, my father fought in the war.
Okay.
Boom.
I was about to say, obsessed with Vietnam.
Because that's a random... I know one person that's ever just willingly gone to Vietnam. Like, oh, you know what? I'm going to book a flight and go to Vietnam. It's like... Why? You know what I'm saying? Like,
was any of this stemmed from? Have you seen the Good Morning Vietnam? The Robert Williams?
Oh no, I saw every Vietnam war movie. Like, I was the G.I. Joe kid that watched every war movie and literally thought I was in the war.
Wow!
I had flashbacks. I don't know how, but I had them.
You had manifested flashbacks you fucking got drunk and made up yourself.
yes. I threw a grenade in the room and everything, you know?
Now, okay, so now this one, the one with Vietnam, where are they all going to be placed on Revolt, or how is this going to come out?
Well, Cuba already aired.
Okay.
They do two-year licenses with me.
Gotcha.
So Cuba aired, Peru aired, Haiti aired. Right now we're renegotiating the backlog again, re-airing all of them, and they just did another license for Vietnam. Yeah.
Dope,
and it premieres
man.
March 23rd.
Okay.
When you go film this shit, do people look at you crazy? Like I could imagine because you got a random, you got a Peruvian, you have a Jamaican, you Cuban, you got a random assortment of characters walking around with a camera in a foreign country.
My other homie Charlie, he does crazy beard designs.
Oh hell!
And he's like a diesel ass dude.
No.
He looks like they think he's MMA wherever we go. They're like MMA, you know, like he's like whatever. And he does these crazy designs, and then in Vietnam, we had the Vietnamese barber shave who's crazy on the back of his head.
Oh, shit.
So they look at us nuts.
I can imagine with that shit. What does that look like? Like, imagine, like, we're in America, right?
Right.
And then we just see, like, a big Ukrainian.
Right, right.
A fucking a Russian.
Yeah, we stand out.
It was like
a sword
thumb. Like, who the fuck are they?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are they doing out here with these cameras and shit?
With cameras, and we just look odd, and we're drunk most of the time.
Right.
So it's crazy. Yeah, it is crazy.
Now, what's a situation that, while filming, that you may or may not have made it out of the situation? Like, okay, this was kind of, I don't know if we should have done this.
The first one was in Peru. Mm-hmm. We went to this hood called Callao. It would be like whatever worst hood you could think of here is mm-hmm. their worst.
Watts.
Watts, the jungle,
Jordan,
whatever.
Yeah,
you know what
Jordan
Downs. We went into this dead end to meet this graffiti writer, and there was these dudes there playing ball, and they just... The guns came out.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, immediately.
You guys in foreign territory?
Yeah. Oh, because y'all stood out. So wait, wait. Y'all drove up.
We were supposed to meet this dude, but I don't know if he gave the memo to everybody else.
Oh, he didn't tell the homies.
And we'd be in a Sprinter van because there's a lot of us. So this, these Sprinter vans look too clean to go into any hood.
Yeah, they don't know what's going on.
So luckily, the driver was like ex-Peruvian military. So like before I knew it, he had turned that bitch around in case we had to get the fuck out of that dead end. And we get out. They pull out the gats, and we were all just like, oh, it's about to get real right now. But they really were just showing us like they had them, like, and you like, act up, it's about to go down.
Wait, wait. Okay, so this was where?
In Peru, in a place called Callao.
Oh, Callao. Okay, so when you in Callao, they didn't tell the homies that y'all was coming.
I don't know why the gats came out.
Like, the gats came out.
I don't know. The dude we were meeting was a graffiti writer, which when the gats came out, I was like, I don't know if the graffiti writer is going to be able to protect us. I don't know if that's the proper hood pass I need.
He don't got enough weight.
But apparently this graffiti writer, what he does is he paints murals of all the dead homies.
From all the gangs in the hood, so they all fuck with him.
That's
so dope. He got the pass, but
super
that
pass.
Don't mean he could.
But
bring
I didn't
a friend.
Know it. Like I'm going there on a hunch. I think he's got the pass.
Right.
I might be wrong. Like he might be like the nerd in the hood.
Damn.
You know,
you don't got the weight, bro.
Yeah.
So, but see that there's a certain level of like you being naive that allows you to get the best shit too. Because if you walk into the situation like, yo, we may not. We're probably not supposed to be over here. It probably would hold back from you even doing anything.
That's true.
You might go to the safe spots.
Yeah.
You might
What's
not
the word,
get
naivete?
That wrong. That's why I didn't try it. I'm like, nah. Just breathe real. Nah. Just forget it.
Nah, yeah.
Nigga.
This nigga tripped. Like, people always tell me, why don't you take a rapper with you? And the reason why I don't take anybody, like a celebrity of any kind, is it fucks up the experience.
Gotcha.
If the people know who the person is, it's not going to be that organic.
Right.
And then the other dumb thing that I say is, I really believe that, I'm betting on the hunch that hip-hop is going to protect me. The culture is going to protect me. The minute they realize that I'm a DJ, my homeboy's a rapper, this guy's a producer, the minute that all is known, all the barriers come down and everybody's accepting of us.
You know what's
What happens, because obviously now your face is getting out there, people are seeing who you are, what happens now when you get into the next couple of the next few documentaries, and you start to get recognized in different places. Do you then put the experience on somebody else?
I might. I definitely want to continue the series, but if I can't do it, I'll put it. You know, I'll produce it and have other people go.
Don't you think that it's interesting to me that you say that, because I've traveled a lot. I've been. I don't know, like 46 states.
Stop trying to flex, dog.
No, I'm talking.
He's stunting on us.
I'm going 46 states.
Speak the language.
Right. And I noticed that every fucking place that you go, there's a hood.
Right.
No matter what state you in or whatever, right? Even in Japan, there's a hood.
Everywhere.
So I agree with what you said. I just want to relate to the fact that I had these experiences where I've gone places knowing that I was out of pocket under the naivete that's the word.
You can say the assumption.
I mean, huh?
Assumption works better too.
Oh, assumption. Okay, yeah. I was just on that. We was on that thread.
Nah, fuck that.
So the assumption that hip hop is gonna protect me.
Yeah.
So when I go places, I do notice that the barriers come down.
Yeah.
Like I'm pretty sure you walking into a place and be like, "Yo, I'm a DJ," and it's like, "Oh, this nigga's a DJ. He good. Hey, put the chopper down. Like, hey, we gotta play you some shit." And it's like, "Oh, it's just like a fraternity almost."
Absolutely.
Of being in hip hop. So when you go to these places, do you ever use your DJ pass? Like,
I mean, I have to, because they're looking at me with this white ass beard. Like, what's this grandpa doing here? You know, I'm like, nah, I'm a fucking DJ. I just decided not to dye my shit. Calm down, relax.
Right.
You know, and then you know now we show them. Sometimes I have to literally show people them, look a video or something.
So I'm
and then they're like, oh shit, all right, you know. But what happens is the first person we meet usually in a country doesn't know anything, so they're a little bit like hesitant. But once they interact with us and they're like, yo, then the word gets out. These dudes are real.
Official,
they're from
yeah.
America. Right. They really care, because my thing is I care about their culture.
Gotcha.
You know, I want to find out about their pioneers. You know, how hip hop started for them.
Who's their Run DMC?
Like, tell me your story. I'm not here trying to create a story. And on top of that, I always tell them, I'm not going to make a documentary about the history of your hip hop like in the whole country, because I can't possibly do that. It's my experience learning about the country through hip hop culture.
Yeah, that lands.
You know, and when they see that we're really being authentic about it, like, yeah, man, the word gets out, and then everybody comes out to woodwork. Everybody wants to hang out and meet and link with us.
Now, do you think it's based on the fact that it's purely hip hop, or is it the fact that you're from America, or is it the fact that you got cameras?
No, I think it's hip hop.
It's hip hop.
I really believe it's hip hop.
That's dope.
I think because a lot of these people in a lot of these countries, they're used to cameras coming out, but usually the cameras are trying to film like the fucked up shit, foul shit.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what they're already like looking at. They're like, oh, what you want to film? How poor we are?
Right,
you
want to
film,
right.
you know, that someone's shitting in the street or yeah. we don't have food? That's what you want to film?
Yeah.
And that's not what I want to film.
Gotcha.
And usually I'm trying to find like the good out of the country. Like, I'm trying to say, like, nah, this is dope. Or in the films, I usually go to some touristy shit mm-hmm. just to show you, like, there's some beauty in this country, and then we'll go to the hood.
But, like, that mural shit is dope.
Yeah.
To document shit like that is dope because I think, like, something you touched on is like, oh, he paints murals of all the dead homies.
Yeah.
So that guy literally go hood to hood
oh, yeah.
and paint their dead homies. And that's like, that's some hip hop shit. But at the same time, it's still beauty in it.
Yeah.
And their love for hip hop, it inspires me. When I leave these countries, I'm inspired.
Yeah.
Like they remind me why I got into the culture.
And you see it, like you said, you see it. You're there documenting them, but you see it through a different lens.
Yeah.
Somebody, you seeing their eyes being widened to their culture and being into this. Now, do you at this point, when you're in these different countries, mm-hmm. you have all these skills from A&R, marketing, all that. Like, has there been points where you see? Because I saw the clip. I saw one of the clips, and there was some Vietnamese chick rapping her ass
off.
Dope as fuck. Right? You said that's a boy. That's her
no,
name.
No, Saboy's her name. And she went viral because when Obama, right after we left, maybe a month or two later, Obama went as the first sitting president in like 50 years
Get
to go to Vietnam. And he did like, he was somewhere and there was a bunch of people and they pointed her out to him, her,
wow.
Saboy. And she got up. They told him that she was a rapper and he beatboxed for her and she rhymed and then she went viral.
I think I did see
CNN
that. I did see that too.
Yeah.
So when you see somebody like a Saboy or in any other country like that, does the skills kick in like, yo, let's try to get that person a deal or maybe have something that works within your company to promote them? Or
the first film, Coming Home, which is the, you know, Coming Home Cuba, but it's just called Coming Home. We met an artist called Denai Suarez. I like to relate her to, like, think of Lauryn Hill, but in Cuba.
Damn.
She got a deal with Universal after the... I'm not going to say solely because of the film, but we helped.
You had something to do
with it. We did her first show in the States.
That's dope.
You know, and she just put out another album right now. She has a joint with Stephen Marley.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and you know, she got a deal. She got a deal, and she built a new crib in Cuba, and she's touring the world.
That's crazy.
And stuff like that. So, yeah, I do see it, but one of the things that I don't want to do is I don't want to be that guy that's like... Oh, you're talented. I'm gonna try to do business with you, and I'm gonna hold you down. What I really want to do is create a network
mm-hmm.
because we drop these seeds in all these countries, and they all feel like they're a part of this Coming Home movement, or Crazy Hood. Like the dudes in Peru are shouting out Crazy Hood, like they're Crazy Hood.
That's crazy.
So I really want to create a network that benefits all of them to make them all worldwide,
the real fraternity.
Yeah, man, and not necessarily try to hold them down on some like
right.
contractual business.
Just more exposing.
Yeah.
Like,
so if in the future I can really offer them something like some. Substantial, I'll do it. But right now, I just want to help them have a network.
Gotcha.
Do you think the state of hip hop at this point, like where are we at in hip hop as far as I don't know how people would describe it as like mainstream versus you know real or traditional
underground or whatever
purest forms of hip hop or whatever. Do you think that they're like there are markets for that? And like when you go, like say you go to another country, say you go to Russia,
right?
And
I hated Russia. Sorry, Russians.
Okay, so
you filmed out there?
I didn't film. I did a show with Nori out there, and it was the worst experience of my life.
All right, say you go to Egypt, right? You go to Egypt, and you're in Egypt right now, and they only know Drake,
right?
Or Nicki Minaj. They don't know anything else because it doesn't reach that far. They don't have the platform. Do you take it upon yourself to be like, okay, this is what's going on? As far as if you want to know what's going on in the United States, if you want to go know what's going on in Florida, this is what's going on. And you show them other shit. Do you own that responsibility?
No. I just take a snapshot of whatever they're doing.
Whatever they're doing.
You know, I come back with my opinions on what they're doing, and I'm like, oh, man, this is crazy.
So you don't do any, like, schooling?
Nah. I mean, if they ask me questions, but nah. I just want to know. I want them to tell me what they're into. What is it for them? I don't want to taint whatever is organically happening for them, you know? Like, for example, in Peru... Like a lot of these countries, the 90s era is really important to them.
Oh, huge.
You know, because that was the era that got to them,
mm-hmm.
and they still kind of live it. But I noticed in Peru specifically, now the internet is you know is percolating over there. Like they're getting stuff, and now they're like getting into trap heavy, and they're like, oh, this is the new wave in America.
Yeah.
We're gonna go that route.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just starting to totally change their vibe. And in other countries, like for example, Cuba, which had no internet,
mm-hmm.
the difference for them was underground hip hop or the only thing that musicians could make money if you're in the hip hop realm was doing reggaeton. Mm.
Yeah.
So a lot of dope ass MCs, this was their gripe over there, just became reggaeton people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that was the thing they could do at hotels and clubs and people would dance to. That's how they made money.
Yeah.
So it's different in every country, you know, what the vibe is, what they gravitate to. Like, you know, like in Vietnam, the b-boying was the main thing over there. And yeah, I already knew that from watching our, you know, like the little Jabba Walkies, you know what I'm saying?
They
already know.
That's what I'm saying. They little. They can move.
You got a stereotype.
But they made so much sense of it because I asked them, I was like, why is it so goddamn big?
Right.
They were like, when we started getting the music, we don't understand the language.
So you got to do
so the beat
to it.
Is what moved us.
Oh, that's the language right there.
That's the language. Wow. Dancing to the beat. And wow, that's why b-boying is so big in some of these countries.
And same thing with graffiti as well, man. They
exactly
might have the music to it as a soundtrack, but that's their way of contributing to the culture. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's amazing.
Why do you think that music from other places don't come here like that?
Because we're fucking ignorant. No, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a language barrier. We're not going to get into something we don't understand. We're like that. You know, we're a beacon of like pop culture to the world.
Right.
They look to us. It's changing. Like in Vietnam, they're looking now to Korea, to Japan. They're looking to people they relate to.
Korea is, you know, like shit up right now.
Yeah. Like we're losing our influence on the world. And that's what I'm trying to say to people. Like we need to wake the fuck up. Like, gosh, what are we giving these people? Because
yeah,
they're starting to look, ah, you guys suck now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but
we're not the cool kids on the
right
block as
but
much.
We don't if music comes in and we don't understand the language, I just think in the States we're just not into it like
discarded,
that. Yeah.
I mean, Latin shit is big.
But there's a lot of Latinos in America.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you think it has something directly related to the demographic? Because me personally, when I had this conversation, for me it was like it's a level of a superiority complex or vanity.
Yeah, I think
where it's like, well, we don't like, that's why they're like the American dollar, right? Like economics, right? America, everything we relate to the American dollar.
Yep.
Pesos is this many dollars. Or
right.
So and so is this many. But everybody else don't do it like
not
that.
Not at all.
Their shit is like, no, this is, you know, it's currency or whatever. Right. So I was like, in music, I think it's the same way where we adapt a lot of the Caribbean shit too.
Yeah.
But other than that, like Korea, China, Vietnam, like we don't.
Yeah, we're arrogant.
That's crazy.
That's what I think too.
We're arrogant, man.
Yeah. Do you still get out on the tables? You still do your shit
at home?
Gotcha. So it's not, you don't really put like mixes out there.
You see what you just did? Do that annoy you when people do this?
Well, see, I'm not a DJ.
Hey,
so,
that shit used to bug the
I don't know
fuck out of me.
That's bro. Some little ass turntables, though.
Bro, I swear to you, when people like, oh,
they got
you
them
a,
Fisher
oh,
Price turntables.
I'm like, they be like, oh, you a DJ? I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
I don't know.
You don't know about a crossfader, bitch.
And is it one record? Is he going like this? One record
though? That's my language. I mean, oh, I'm not a DJ like
you
that.
DJ, right?
Right,
so I don't even understand
what's, better?
What's happening right now.
No, we don't do that either, man. We don't go like
everybody
this.
Be like,
the headphone is fine by itself, bro.
Right, damn, I'm fucking
I don't need to squeeze it to hear it.
That used to fucking drive me nuts. Like, what are you doing?
That's why you're not a DJ.
Shit. Like, we don't even hold the phone like this no more. It's fucking ear pods and AirPods and shit.
But so you just mix at home.
Yeah, yeah. People want me to get, like, I get offers now because of Drink Champs and do gigs and stuff. And I used to be heavy in the clubs in Miami. I did, like I said, pirate radio. I did college radio. And the mixtapes is how I got my claim to fame in Miami. But I don't like being a jukebox to people,
mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why I kind of stopped actively DJing because I'm not the motherfucking man like that. I'm not gonna be the jukebox. You're not gonna come up to me and tell me what the fuck to play.
I'm from
the era where the DJ told you what the fuck you like.
Right, right. But I think that there's space for somebody like yourself that has heavy influence to say, look, this is the shit that I'm rocking with. I mean, now you obviously do it in your own capacity.
In my own way, yeah. I'm still a DJ without turntables.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
Like, I'm never gonna stop being a DJ.
Very true, very true. And that's the dope part about the influence in technology and shit right now, because there's different ways to do that. You know what I'm saying, to command that attention. So at this point, what's next for DJ EFN?
Shit, continuing the films. We're gonna go to Colombia next. Mm-hmm. I want to go to Mongolia. If it's up to me, I'm going to fucking Israel and Palestine, but my friends don't want to go.
I wouldn't want to go with you either. I would go, but I would go under protest.
My friends put their foot down. My friends are like,
hey, man.
Drain was the first one. Drain's like, I ain't going. And if they call me nigga over there, I'm going to go crazy.
Oh, they for sure calling him a nigga. I'm telling you right now. Hey, Dre, listen, bro. They going to call you all kind of shit.
So the
Palestinians? Oh, what? Don't let you look at they girl.
It's like, the crazy shit with me
this
is
nigga, look at my girl. Fucking, we killed you.
This nigga.
Nah. I'm willing to go anywhere, bro. Like, I'll go any motherfucking where, man. So yeah, the film is gonna continue. Drink Champs is obviously gonna continue. We're trying to do the Drink Champs network.
Dope.
We put out other podcasts.
Yeah.
And you know, Crazy Hood, my label, producers. Like, I mean, I don't know what's next because I'm always trying to do something else.
That's
like,
dope.
You know, whatever feels natural to me. That's the other thing. I'm not trying to do shit that don't feel natural.
Right.
Like, I feel sometimes people force shit.
Yeah.
My thing is not about forcing it. It's just if you think, oh, that comes natural to me, I can do that.
Yeah.
Then go ahead and do it, brother. Make your way. But don't do, oh, that motherfucker's doing that. I'm going to try and do it too. And
then
do some dumb shit. You know, like, that's not the way I'm going
to
do it.
Is there anybody that you guys want to get on the podcast that you haven't had, because I know there's a specific market of artists that you guys target. You know what I'm saying? You go for the legendary stories.
Right.
The new artists may have
people got something to say.
Yeah, people that got something to say. So is there somebody right now, well, two-part question. Is there somebody that you're looking at, yo, this is our go-to legendary, this is the one we're shooting for? Is there anybody at this point that you guys are aiming for?
I mean, we would love to have Kanye on the show.
Gotcha.
You know,
I would love to see Kanye in that.
I think that would be an amazing episode.
I think he would storm the fuck out of there.
Nah, I think he'd really fuck with us, man.
No,
Does he have a relationship with Nori?
Yeah.
No,
I mean, and he named his kid, well, they call him Nori.
Man. Yeah.
So Nori takes it like he named it after me, you know?
I think he would storm out of there just because.
It's the bottle.
I think he would storm out of there because. He can be a little temperamental. So I know, but like my interactions with Ye has always been like, he's good. He's great.
I dealt with him in the street team days with Def Jam when he first came out.
When he first came out.
I dealt with him.
So, okay, look, that's a good question. Do you notice a difference?
I gifts. So can you put it up there?
Oh, you
gifts. Appreciate that, man.
Not to cut you off, that's a brand I'm with, Colombian White, my Colombian.
Oh, it's a drink from the Drink Champ.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, man,
yeah.
Let's get that on the camera right there, man.
At Colombian White, we just launched it.
Distilled in Miami. Absolutely.
Distilled in Miami.
And we're under the same umbrella. Pitbull got a vodka called Voli. And we're all under the same umbrella.
All right,
thank you, man. I appreciate that, man. I don't even remember the fuck
just
I was saying.
Just be careful when you drink it.
I don't drink. So I wouldn't even.
Relax.
Relax. Oh, I need a relaxed tea. I need a relaxed tea.
Hit
and
up
I need
Mr.
a
Lee.
Who's Crazy tea. So I'm going to go and pay my money and order that.
Nah. Give me sizes and I'll send you stuff, man.
All right, cool. And then also, here's some. A quick shout out to. What is it? Hold on. I want to fuck it up. Is it 8-9?
8 and 9 clothing.
8 and 9. Yeah. I have this shirt that I wear to every formal event. Shit you
formal
not.
Formal events. 8 and 9?
8 and 9. No, it's a long sleeve.
Oh, they got nice shit.
It's a long sleeve.
That's the one where everybody say you look like Dr. Dre?
No. The other that one. That's the V-neck shit.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I don't wear button-ups and ties and shit. So I always look for long sleeve, like knitted shit that I could wear. And 8 and 9 gave me this one thing that I wear for every photo shoot.
Dope.
It's the same shit. Shout out to them when I was in Miami out there.
Yeah, shout out to Ray Naps. Yeah.
So shout out to them. I appreciate that.
And lastly, is there an interview that you've reached out to and it didn't go the way you wanted, but somebody that you wanted to go, but they refused. Didn't want to come on the show, basically.
I think now, the way that Drink Champs has evolved, I think a lot of people don't want to come on the show.
Because they don't want to be exposed like that.
Because they are worried about their brand, and they're worried about getting fucked up with us.
I think in the age of social media, where we're at, transparency.
I'm noticing that.
Transparency is the best thing. You know what I'm saying? Even when you guys did that Diddy interview.
That shit was...
Well, you know the true story behind that interview, right? That's a three-hour interview that got condensed.
Yeah, they cut down to 30, man.
Well, Puff was drunk.
Drunk as fuck.
Okay, he was drunk. So,
are there any plans to release other parts of that interview? So,
I mean, I can't officially say that. We could turn off the mics.
Yeah,
yeah.
To revoke. Let's see what's happening.
Diddy's gonna not get the check anymore.
Right. Yeah, and we like you, Puff. Thank you. We appreciate you.
But that's the thing.
Shout out to Ciroc.
Yeah, shout out to Ciroc. Go get that Ciroc.
Dillion.
Yeah, put that shit. Go. You know.
I think people come to you for that. You know what I'm saying? Just like they go to the Breakfast Club for certain interviews.
Right.
They go to certain pockets and go to certain lanes for that. And I think that's the best thing that you can get from any artist or any brand. You go that people want to see transparency. We're in the age of social media where they can see all that shit anyway. They want to see shit like that.
And you can get exposed real fast.
But not. I mean,
I'm not saying. I'm saying the internet is going to put your business out there anyway.
Right.
So
you might as well
be the one to control your narrative.
Absolutely. That's why I thought one of my favorite episodes is 50.
Yeah, I love that episode.
He doesn't drink, and he came to, and I was like, he's a genius because he doesn't drink, but he said if he's going to drink, he's going to promote his brand and take shots of his own liquor on Drink Champs.
Yeah,
amazing, man.
Genius.
Yeah. No,
And he had so much fun with us, you know, and that was one of my favorite episodes.
I like the fifth episode, and I really appreciated the Puff one. That shit was That was different. Shout out to Pub.
The dog pound. You guys had dog.
Drew
dog.
Hill in Vegas?
Yeah.
When I exposed my ex-girlfriend?
Shit.
The dog song chick.
Bruh, they get you every
she
episode.
She just
man.
Found out about that.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So how she deal with that?
She just hit me up like, she was like, what really? The fuck?
Really?
Really?
That's what you gonna do? That's how you doing me?
Oh, I was man. Like, drunk facts. Hashtag drunk facts.
All right, man. Well, we definitely appreciate your time, man. And coming on, man. Anytime you're in LA, come fuck with us. For we'll sure. definitely support what you got going on. Crazyhood.com, right?
Yeah, and drinkchamps.com.
And drinkchamps.com, man. Support this guy. Keep it going and keep doing it for the culture.
Thank
bro.
You, man. I appreciate you guys.
Man, we really appreciate it. Real shit.
Nah, thank you, man.
We just said it like twice.
No. I'm doing my own appreciation.
Okay, my bad. It's a different separate.
Let me appreciate the man on my own.
No,
man.
Right. I appreciate appreciation.
I don't have to do collective fucking appreciation with you.
All right, Chuck does a DJ here. DJ EFN, man. Checking out. It's Homegrown Radio.
Make some noise.
Hey! Hey! I'm Cuban, dude.
Cuban, nigga.
I'm a Cuban, nigga.